Hello, I'm Christy Mack. I am an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is September 27, 2018. So I just celebrated 3 years in September, which, thank you, is a true miracle. I would love to say that just I woke up September 27 and was like, today I choose not to drink. You know, you see those memes sometimes like, oh, today is a good day. I choose not to drink. It had nothing to do with me. That choice was, that sobriety date was, God chose that for me. And there's no doubt in my mind. I was way past making any clear decision like that. I couldn't stop drinking. I give all the glory to God. I talk a lot about my higher power when I tell my story, who for me is God. So just, I guess, you know, substitute whatever. I hope I don't offend anybody, but it's easier if I just say God instead of my higher power. And the reason I do that is because he's worked miracles in my life. And there's no doubt in my mind. And when you hear a few of the things, you know, I hope if you're struggling with that, that it kind of touches you in a way, in some way, as well, because, I had no power at all. And that, was all basically taken out of my hands and put in his. So the glory is all to him. A little bit about myself. I grew up in a really great, normal home. Okay. My parents are still married. My dad had a business. We had never struggled financially. My parents loved each other. I felt safe. I felt loved. I felt, you know, all of those things. If anything, they were too strict, if I'm really going to bitch. But, my first rehab that I went to that I refer to as my princess rehab, it was one of many. At that one, I had just lost my job, but I still have really good insurance. So, I was not an alcoholic, just, you know, I had to go because everyone was just to get everyone off my ass. And, they were really big on childhood trauma, right? And they would, put you in the mush pot. It was co-ed. They put you in this mush pot and everyone circled around you and you needed to share your childhood trauma. And people, including many of you, I'm sure, have had horrible things. I mean, some brought me to tears and bring me to tears. And, they kept on trying to get it out of me, you know, and I'm like, I don't know, you know, and finally, this is what I said. Okay. So I was really into Little House on the Prairie when I was little, and Mary went blind and cause she had a fever. And it was really scary to me because every time I had a fever, I thought I was going to go blind. And I think that's when my panic attack started. And so that explains my childhood, okay? Like, I cannot peg it on my parents. I just can't, or anything that happened. That's just not my story. But anyways, so I had a normal childhood. I started drinking my freshman year in high school. I was at a dance with an older guy, and I learned very quickly, and what happened to me very quickly at 15 was that craving just was immediate for me. The very first night I drank, I liked it. I liked beer. I could drink more than most people there, and it was on. And every time I have ever drank, I can honestly say this, I always, you know, overshot the mark, and the party never ended for me. So I quickly fell into, you know, the party crowd. But I had my shit together. You know, I like played sports and, you know, got almost straight A's, was involved in stuff. And I was a pretty good kid. We were doing, you know, I know this is AA, but I'm kind of a early 90s high school person. So there was like some stuff going on that was late 80s left over. And I enjoyed partaking basically anything that is going to make me be able to stay up and drink longer. I was liked, you know, and I've since learned through the years and through all of my work that I am not an addict, that I could take it or leave it. But for a long time, I'm like, I don't know. Am I an alcoholic? Not that it even freaking matters, but, you know, In my late adult, I didn't do anything like, I don't know, maybe some diet pills. I might have snorted some of those. But, but anyways, so that's not really part of my story, other than it was just kind of part of my partying, you know? So that's how I was in high school. Fast forward to college, more of the same shit show, always the loudest, you know, on the table. My party never ended. There's probably one of me downtown right now by Celia dancing on a table. And always obnoxious, you know, like whatever you do, I'm going to do better. You know, I'm going to, you know, always do that. I could just drink all night, you know, a weekend. And I know there were some things that were kind of different, like my roommates, this is pre-cell phone. And so my college roommates would be all like pissed off when I got home like late Sunday night when we all left together Thursday. And they're like, where have you been? And I'm like, huh, where have you guys been? You know, like that. I remember people being kind of pissed, you know, like, well, you should let us know. I kind of, when one group was ready to go home, I like went down some other best friends, and then they were my best friends, and then like other best friends till I ended up with those people for 2 days, you know. That was, you know, my college, still fun, still good grades. I got a college degree, you know. I got pregnant and then married in that order. My senior, right at the end of my college. And I just stopped partying at that point. Like I'm a grown up now. I had a baby. I spent most of my early marriage bitching at my husband because he was partying still, you know? I had 4 kids in 5.5 years. I didn't have to go to rehab to stop drinking. I don't think that obsession had kicked in for me at all. But when I did drink, which was a few times a year, you know, New Year's Eve, I don't know, my birthday, it was that same thing. Like, I drank one drink, and I was not going to stop. Like, obnoxious, I didn't stop. I partied all night long, wouldn't go home, you know. Then I'd feel all shitty when my kids were either hungover, my kids. But, you know, for the most part, you know, there is a story in the big book. I meant to bring my big book, but a story, we call him Mr. Carpet Slippers or Fuzzy Slippers. And he has kind of the same story. He was an early partier, then he got his job, and he was, you know, through will and determination, wanted to be successful, and he stopped drinking. And his, it says he stopped drinking like for 30 years or whatever, like didn't drink at all. But for me, a couple times a year, I did drink. But, and then retired and, quickly became, you know, stumbling alcoholic that couldn't get out of his carpet slippers or whatever. And that story resonates with me because that is like me completely. And it goes on to say, I'm not someone that's good at quoting anything, but in a nutshell, this is kind of what it says, that's common with women and alcohol. And so for me, once my kids were like old enough to like take care of themselves, I could go do things. I got divorced. I didn't have my kids every other weekend and, started going out. And so my alcohol at that point quickly progressed. And I'm talking like, quickly, in a matter of years, I went from, you know, a functioning person with, I taught school, you know, to losing everything. You know, really, really quickly. And if you were to talk to any of, like my old friends or, you know, family, I was the last person that they would think that would be an alcoholic because I was the one taking care of everyone's kids. Always, because that's what I did. I didn't drink that much, but I made up for it. You can say that. I now know that, you know, I have the craving, obsession, and spiritual malady. I was sick even though I wasn't drinking. So for me, it came out in other ways. You know, I wasn't a drunk, but everything I did, you know, was in excess. You know, if I was going to be exercising, I didn't just say, okay, I'm going to start walking a mile 3 days a week. No, I'm like signing up for boot camp at 5 a.m. 6 days a week, you know, and I'm not going to be one kid's room mom. I'm going to be everyone's room mom and library mom and recess mom. And I'm better than you because, because I do all these things, you know, when really I'm the stupid one that do them. But I now know that I was just trying to fill something with shopping, like overshop, whatever it was in my life. I now know that I was trying to fill like a hole. I don't know if I was born with it or what, but, you know, trying to fill just that an empty spot that really only God can fill, right? And if you would have told me, even probably a little over a year ago, that I had a spiritual malady, I'd be like, I know God. I would have been really offended. Like I could, you know, for God so loved the world, I can spout off Bible verses. But, so now I'm a drunk, and it progressed quickly to like a weekend drunk to, you know, now I'm drinking the weekends I have my kids. Really quickly to where now I'm drinking alone, now I'm drinking all day, I lost my job. So my family like does this intervention, which I, by the way, I hate interventions. I will do anything I'm asked for my part and helping an alcoholic that still suffers, but I will not ever do a giant intervention. Like to this day, if I see too many cars like that are familiar at one house, I'm like, is it Christmas or is this a setup? I think it's a setup. I do not like that. I found out about it. But so basically I just kind of agreed to go to rehab. Okay. And just, I wanted everyone to go. I mean, I knew I had I'd been over drinking, you know, and for some reason I always put this on my, I always put a year. Okay. I probably should stop for a year. Right. I always said that, like, oh yeah, I've been drinking too much. I need to stop for a year. That never worked out very good for me. So I go to this rehab and, I meet with, and I guess what I'm going to share is that, I look back and I realize how much the big book describes me, right? When I thought it didn't. And I think that's what, when Israel introduced me, what I was trying to say, I guess, is find the things you're similar, because it's very easy to look through and be like, I'm not a stockbroker. You know, like I didn't pack up a motorcycle and ride anywhere, you know? So I get to this rehab and at this point I'm basically drinking like wine all the time, you know? I hadn't even progressed to vodka yet, but I'm drinking like 8 bottles a night, you know, whatever. And I'm starting, the insanity has kicked in. Okay, let's just say that. But I don't know it yet because I'm insane. And I get there and this, you know, my head's like this big. And the psychiatrist is this renowned psychiatrist, okay? He had just been flown back in from, like, Germany to talk about recovery and shit. And so I have my first meeting with him, like, on day 2. And at this point, I'm actually not – I think I had, like, a little shake that morning of, but I'm not even, like, having to detox, you know? And so he sits, it's our first like session or whatever. And he sits me down and he's like, and I'm like, I don't even really know why I'm here. My family's just worried about me. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I drink too much wine. And he's like, well, what's your goal? Like, what do you want out of this? You're here for 30 days, you know? And I'm like, I want to be like a heavy drinker. I don't know. Like, I didn't even say like, I want to be a social drinker, right? I'm like, and he said, what does that look like? And I'm like, oh, like dancing on the table, but not falling off, you know, like not making an ass out of myself everywhere, you know? And he's like, well, how do you think we're going to do that? And I'm sitting here like this motherfucker. I think there's 12 steps or something, right? Like, and he's like, well, the rule of thumb is usually if you're an alcoholic that you can't ever drink again. And I'm like, all right, I checked out on day 2 of rehab. I stayed, but I'm like, this, he's crazy, right? You know, like I am never going to not drink. But at that, I couldn't even go there. And, I end up being convinced, and I am not even kidding. I was dead ass serious. I end up being convinced. Okay, first of all, I'm a special ed teacher. So I took 6 weeks of a behavior intervention course, right? So I'm now an expert. And I'm way smarter than the psychiatrist, right? And so I was like, this guy hates me, and he either wants me or he doesn't like me because I'm smarter than him. And I full on believe that. Like, how obnoxious was I, right? And I mean, full on was like, wonder what behavior technique he's going to try today, you know? And I'm sure he didn't like me, but those were not the reasons. So you can see I got a lot out of that rehab. And it was beautiful, you know, we like well watched and stuff. And sometimes I'm like, how can I go back there for 30 days without relapsing? Because that was pretty nice. So I think I'm cured. I'm like done, right? I gotta go home. I gotta get my family back. And I did. And I probably stayed sober, if you count that 30 days, I don't know, 2 months, I'm going to say maybe. And I got to watch the time and I'm blind. Is it 7:30 right now?
Yes.
Okay. I get to talking, as you can see. Not shy. So whatever. I got home immediately, you know, got everything back, got my dog back, and everything's good, you know, and then I convinced myself, because I'm crazy and it's insane and not normal. My kids were going to be gone for the night, and I'm like, I deserve a bottle of wine. I'm clearly not an alcoholic because I have not drank for like 60 days. I mean, alcoholics can't not drink for 60 days, right? So I'm not an alcoholic, and so I drank that night, and that, you know, spiral, because it's a progressive disease, to where I'm back at the store that night and I'm sitting at 7-Eleven waiting for 6 a.m. to roll around, you know, and proceed to stay drunk for the next, I don't know, few months, and, you know, repeat. And every time that happened, I was worse and worse, and my rehabs got less and less fancy too. And so I've been to like five, I think, total. And so, you know, that went on for years, a few years, right? My kids would go to live with family, and I would go to rehab, and then I'd come back. And I would, I started to kind of like think I'd probably have a problem. And when I was detoxing, I'd be like, well, this feels like shit. And as soon as I did, and like 5 days in, I got really cocky, you know, and I was like, I don't even need to be here. You know, that, and I was good at convincing the other sick people. Okay, so I'm just as sick as them, and I would feel really great when I convinced the other people at rehab that I didn't need to be here. They're like, no, you don't. You're not as bad as us. And then I'd be like, I know, you know, and I'd like tell the guy, I'm like, no one here even thinks I need to be here. And they're like, they're sick. And I'm like, well, I'm not, you know. And, you know, progress that to, I just did that a few times, in and out of the hospital, you know, and to where I was finally drinking I lost all my jobs. I stopped going to jobs. Like, I got out of one rehab, and I got a job at, out at the reservation at Tachi, running the education department. This was like a big job, okay? I was getting paid way more than any teaching job I'd ever had. And back that weekend that I, either that weekend or another one that I thought I deserved it, I had not drank in a while. I was so drunk, I just didn't go to work Monday, and I never went back. Like a full-on job, like supervisor job. I'm like, they have to be wondering, like, what happened to her? I like, never got my check, nothing, you know? It's like, fuck it, you know? So I end up really bad, guys, you know, and I can tell some drunk a lot stories, and it's pretty funny. We all can laugh, right? But it was really bad. I was homeless. I lived in my car. I had a car, and I like to say, oh, I had a Lexus. Okay, I bought this car at it was $600. It was vintage at a tow yard, right? And I bought that one because the tags are up to date. And I'm like, well, the rest of these tags aren't up to date, so here's mine. And everything worked, you know, and I thought, oh, I'm hot shit now. And then my $600 Lexus. And I ended up getting pulled over after I escaped the hospital after a 5150. And I got pulled over, and I'm like sober, kind of. I think I had Ativan maybe, or I don't know, but I hadn't drank in 2 days or whatever. And they were fake tags. So that didn't work out for me. But I was living in the Lexus, and I was at Plaza Park. I thought that was like the safest place. for me. I was scared. You know, people make jokes about things, well, but it was scary to me. I didn't like it. I was, you know, I was assaulted out there, and I was able, it could have been really bad. Turns out I can like beat the shit out of people, when I'm drunk. And I was too scared to call the cops because I was so wasted, and I thought I killed this motherfucker. I'm like, I better not call the cops. He wasn't there in the morning. But anyways, bad shit happened, and I was scary. It was cold, you know, it was starting to get, you know, I was frauding, welfare because I didn't have any of my kids. Right. But I was still getting money for having kids, and I was still getting like my EMT, whatever, EBT for having kids, EMT, EBT. And so what I would do, and this is horrible to admit, like it is funny, but like I'm like pretty, when I'm not a drunk, I'm pretty honest. Right. But what do? We have to do anything. I was sick. I couldn't not drink. I ran out of money. Okay, so I would go with my EBT card, and I had like, I don't know, $600 on there or something, and I would go to the Save Mart on DeMaria that was self-checkout, and I would buy expensive food, and I convinced myself that people thought that I was like a housewife just out shopping. I had dreads, okay? No bra, dreads, and a broken flip-flop that I had taken a stick through the top to hold, like, you know, the top pops out. You know, filthy, dirty feet, and I'm like down there. I bought some shrimp. But I would buy all this expensive food, and I had a big bag, and I would go by and I just like smash as much vodka as I could, and big old handles of vodka in that bag, and then self check myself out. And I did that quite a few times. Well, every time I ran out. I would go back to Plaza Park, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm like the Robin Hood of Plaza, because I would give it to, like, all the, like, homeless people. And I would say that, like, I wasn't homeless, too. It's like I'm feeding the homeless. And, like, I just warped, right? And so there I am, feeding the homeless. And I remember this one time, and I can remember this was a low point for me. Like, I remember, like, even for me at this point, I'm all, what the hell? Something might be wrong with you. One of my friends rode his bike up with this trailer, and he was like, hey, I got us something. And I'm like, cool, I got you something, too. Here's something, like, that no one would buy, you know? Have some French cheese. And they had homemade alcohol. I don't even know what was in it. And it was in this, like, decanter, like, about that big, like, kind of shaped like a pyramid with it. And he's like, we could share it. And I'm like, oh, my God, awesome. And he turned his back, and I just downed it. And he's all, did you just drink that? And I was like, I did, you know? And I remember getting back in my car that night and being like, I really hit a low spot, you know. So, you know, this is when God started stepping in. My family was obviously really upset. And like I said, I believed in God. I had this this journal, and I called it The Rantings of a Drunk Blonde. I, like, had that written on the front. And I would sit there. I have that journal. And my home group's like, you need to bring it. And I'm all, I haven't looked at it in 3 years, but it was the only thing I left the park with when I went to rehab. And, oh, God, I can't even only imagine what was in there. But I was writing to God. You know, I believed in God. Not enough to turn my will over to him or anything. But anyways, my dad came out, and he said, well, we found you a place. They don't have any openings, but you have to do this assessment first at mental health. And I'm like, okay, all right. And he gave me a little slip of paper, and that was like 2 weeks away, maybe. And I had fallen in that pond and lost my phone. And so, I had no phone, and I didn't know what day it was. I didn't even know what time it was, let alone what date it was. And there's no doubt in my mind that God got me to that. I made it to that appointment somehow. Like, I woke up knowing I had to go, somehow drove my car, wasted. I went in there with, like, a clear like to-go cup, just pure vodka. I went to the meeting like that. My flip-flop had finally broke through the stick. It was only dreads on this side. And I had no bra, you know, the whole thing I had at the grocery store when I was like the fancy stay-at-home mom. And I'm in there just wasted off my ass and telling everyone that I don't belong here. I'm not crazy enough to be here. And I'm like walking around with that broken flip-flop. The lady's all, "Are you drinking right now?" when I got in there. And I'm like, "Yeah." And I remember doing that and like acting like that was so normal to be like wasted at an appointment at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday. And my dad, another thing, my dad had snuck out to the park and did something to my fuel line because he was trying to make it where I couldn't drive drunk. And I remember getting in my car that morning because, you know, obviously he had gotten some advice that was like, just tell her the appointment and have her get herself there. And I remember starting in the car. I was like, you know, and I was like, I got to get to this appointment, you know. And I made it, you know. I got to that appointment, and the wheels started turning from there, you know. Am I not crazy enough? At one point, I said I made too much money. I won't qualify for this shit. I'm a teacher. They're like, "I thought you were homeless." Okay, I mean, kind of, you know. Anyways, I was a hot, let's just say I qualified. I qualified for their services, and I got into New Hope. I'm a product of New Hope, and it was still like another week before I could get into to there, and my dad came out to the park. This is September 27th, and I had already been drinking all day. I had stolen like four handles, so I'm good. And I don't know what, this is another thing, God stepped in. What made me that day at that moment be like, okay, because the day before, 2 hours before, I had four bottles of vodka. I probably wouldn't, I don't know what made me say, okay, I'll go. He brought my brother for like backup because he thought he was going to have to force me. I'm all right. I grabbed my rantings of a drunk blonde and was like, I'll go right now. I went with what I had on and I crawled in that place and said, help me. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. I was desperate. I was scared. I was sick. By this point, they didn't know. Well, the week before I had been at the hospital, I called 911 on myself. I was dying. And I really was. they gave me 2 weeks to live. They said that my potassium and my iron were not compatible with life. And they gave me, you know, their little potion, whatever, Librium and Ativan, and I'm like laying there. And they called mental health, like Cyprus, and they like were arguing. They didn't know what to do with me. Like another low when the hospital and the mental hospital are not sure where you should go. Neither one wants you. And, you know, I had alcohol-induced psychosis is what I had. You know, I mean, that's the truth of the matter. And so I got in Cyprus. I spent, you know, well, I left the hospital that time and drank. And are you fan? And got drunk. It didn't matter to me. And, you know, no higher power was going to stop me from drinking, including someone saying, you're going to die if you drink again. I left and drank. My son came home from college, and he was so worried about his siblings. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, Mama, I can see right through you. It's like you have no soul. He's like, your eyes, they're not pretty and blue. They're black. Mom, you're black. Your eyes are black. And I remember thinking I should probably generate a tear. But really what I did is, before you leave, can you take me up to the store? Because I don't want to walk. I did not have a car anymore, you know. And I look back on that and I'm like, that's sick. You know, like that's really sick. If anybody, there's no one that loves their kids more than me. If my kids couldn't make me, you know, keep me sober, there's nothing human going to keep me sober. So I went to New Hope. And started getting better, and I just did what they told me. I shut up. That's my best advice, is just shut up and listen. I am not smarter than these psychiatrists, no matter what you think, you know. I truly believe that I had to be humbled because my head was this big, to nothing with every door shut for me before I could get better. About 6 weeks in, and that's where the God thing is really huge for me is, my dad took me to church. He goes to this like big, huge mega church in Fresno. And, the whole situation is just a little bit, another God thing. Okay. It was a little bit weird. My dad's from the South. Okay. He's from, you know, Kansas, Oklahoma, you know, back in there. He loves this church up in Fresno, and it's like a huge African American church, right? And I'm talking like yelling out, "Hallelujah, you tell it, Pastor," kind of stuff, you know? So just the fact that he went there, I was like, huh. And then, he's very private. Growing up, we would go to church. He's like, "Do not stand up and say we're new. I don't want these people coming to my house," you know? And, you know, we'd sit in the back and run the hell out, you know, very private, private man. And, I'm 6 weeks sober. He takes me. It's hundreds of people. And these people are coming up to me and they're like, "Oh, we're so happy to meet you, Christy. They knew me. We've been praying for you." I'm like, "Your dad was here." I'm going to get all weird. I'm super not emotional, but I get emotional with this. "Your dad's been coming here for the last year, sitting in the front row with his arms outstretched, crying. And we finally reached out. And he told us about your story. We're just so happy you're here." So I'm like, oh, I'm like, "My dad did? Okay, my dad comes here." So we're in the middle. We sit in the back middle on the left, and it's hundreds of people, this beautiful band. It's all going, and I'm feeling it. And the pastor walks in, and he's like 6'8", and I'm not exaggerating. And I know that because I used to party with him in college. And I'm like, "That's your pastor? Oh." And he comes in and he starts his sermon, and pretty soon he looks out, and I swear he had like eye contact with me, but I'm starting to like buy into this whole ego thing. I'm starting to like listen to people. And I one time thought George Strait did that at a concert with like 50,000 people. And so I'm like, "He's not looking at me, Christy. Oh my God." You know, like, neither was George Strait. And he just stops and he said, "Can the band come back up here?" And he starts walking out. The band comes up, they start singing, and he just like walks straight down the aisle, straight at me, calls me out to the aisle. And he's huge, right? And he was looking at me, and he just grabbed me in this biggest bear hug, because he's huge. I like put my head in his armpit, and I'm crying, and he's just whispering a prayer to me. And I don't know what the man said. I just know with every fiber in me that the obsession from alcohol was lifted from me at that moment. And I cried, and I heard God as clear as I'm talking to you right now. "Christy, I have it. Give it to me. I have it. Your job is to listen. Okay, you just listen. Give it to me." And the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulder. And he did that for a long, like kind of a long time, where I thought, at the time I didn't, but after, I mean, it was like minutes, you know, it wasn't just like a quick thing. I'm like in the middle of church, and then I don't even really know. I went back to my thing, and then they finished the song, and then he just started preaching where I left off. And from that moment on, I gave my will to God, and I have never looked back. The obsession was lifted. I am free. I have to do the things I do to stay free. But there's no, and there's other things, obviously, that, you know, God got me here. God got me to New Hope on that day when, for whatever reason, I said I would go and surrender, and surrendering from that moment on. And it's not natural for me to give it to God. I don't think it's human nature, especially for me. And when I start feeling like squirrely, you know, try having adult kids, okay? Like my kids are between 16 and 22. Talk about having no control, right? So they're like doing stupid shit. And you know it. And there's nothing you can do. And I keep them up. I'm like up at night. I start worrying. I start trying to like manipulate shit and everything. And if I start feeling bad and weird, I stop and say, God, I trust you. I believed in God before. I knew Bible verses, but unless it worked out in my favor, I didn't like give them like, it must be your will. Oh, $20. It's your will for me. Vodka's on sale. Vodka's on sale for $18.99. You know, like this worked for me. Or if he didn't answer me the way I wanted, then it was like, I gave 2 coats for kids. 2 brand new coats, you know, and you're not going to pay my rent, you know, like, what the hell is this? So, you know, that's my natural thing, you know, and I do that daily, sometimes daily, you know, like, hey, take the wheel. And then I'm able to let that go and just be like, hey, my dad's real intense and he's real involved in my kid's life. And he's like, oh my God, yeah, he's moving home from college. And I don't know what, Dad. God has a plan for Jace, okay? It may not be our plan, but he does. I can guide him, but God is in charge. So that's kind of my message. I don't know, what time is it? I'm blind.
In 9 minutes.
Okay. So, you know, that's how it was for me. That's what happened and how it is for me today. Out of my 4 kids, my boys never really, like, left me. My kids never went in the system. Thank God for that. They could have and should have, but my family would step in and take them. So my boys, and even now, they're like, we weren't really traumatized. They were in high school, and I let kids party at my house. So they're like, life was pretty fun for us. my daughter, when she was a freshman is when she moved out. It wasn't so fun for her when all the cool seniors were wasted and our mom was wasted and buying alcohol for everyone. It was really embarrassing for her. And she went to babysit my brother's kids and never came back. And my youngest daughter, who's 16 now, went to live with my sister at some point. And honestly, I was like, she got in the way of my partying, like, cause I was still trying to like throw dinner out and shit. I wasn't even taking her to school, you guys. Like, that's so not me. Buying my kids alcohol. I mean, it's just so not me. I would never do that, you know, and I would buy for them because they were giving me a ride and I could get some for me, you know. My relationships with my boys kept, they never like left. They were older. Boys love their moms. My daughter, I'm 3 years sober and this will be our first Christmas, where I have all 4 of my kids and we're in great places. I have my 16-year-old full-time. I got her back full-time. I was over a year sober. So another message I have is patience, okay? I sat here in New Hope when people would get 43 days, and I would be like, God, that must be, how did we do that? And then 6 months, and I'd be like, there's just no way, you know? And you just consistent and plug along. I listened to my sponsors. I had a few sponsors. All of them have been great. God led me different places, and I listened to tell me, you know, give Ainsley time, you know. And I'm like, you mean to tell me when things were going on, I'm a year and a half sober, and things are going on at my sister's house that I'm not okay with how I would parent, that I didn't want to call up and be like, I'm coming over with the cop, because there was no papers or anything, and that little shit's getting in my car, and we're going home. I mean, that's what I want to do. I listened. It was boo. Christy, text her a few nights a week. I love you. She'll come back. And I think I'm her favorite person. She left for college, and we've all rebonded. Let's put it, COVID, we rebonded. Mike, I think you guys should go back to college. But she went to college and at Ole Miss, and she's actually had a horrible, horrible semester, which includes a boyfriend that's going to Texas Tech. I don't think her semester would have been quite as bad if she didn't have him. And now she's following him to Texas Tech. Do I want my daughter doing that? No. But it must have been God's plan, because it's really working out pretty smooth, more smooth than Ole Miss. Anyways, if she, and she's really drama. If I go a day without her Facebook or FaceTiming me crying, it's like, oh, things must be, she's having a good day. And it could be something huge or something little. And I thought, how lucky am I that she calls my ass every day? How lucky am I? She's never lived back in my home. She graduated last year. We repaired our relationship, that she's bawling because she's so homesick. She wants her mom. So, patience. Listen. Some people, I don't know everything, but I might know more than someone here that has not very much time. There's people here that know way more than me. Pray, listen, give it to God. Be consistent. Be of service. You know, those are the things I have to do to stay free. God got me free, but there's some conditions. And with that, I think I'll close up. And I'm just, thank you for letting me speak. I'm so happy to be here. This was my favorite meeting until COVID. And to see familiar faces and to see some people back. There's a few of you I've had in my prayers. So I'm just really happy and proud of you guys. And if I can do it, if God can do it for me, He can do it for you. And you can do it too. All right? You're welcome.